Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Podcast on Radio MD, iHeart, or wherever you download us from. Thanks very much for downloading us. We, as usual, are brought to you in the B segments and the A segments by none other than Persona Nutrition. Can you imagine vitamins and supplements personalized to your diet and what you need or don't need? That's right. If you don't need anything, they're happy to tell you that. You can take the free online assessment at mypersona.com. Type to a nutritionist or dietitian to see how to improve your diet as well. Mypersona.com. This is episode 1035B. The B's are always the guest segment. And we have someone who I'm really interested in talking to today. He's from my own institution. Dr. Liska is at the Cleveland Clinic. David Liska, L-I-S-K-A. So that's how to search for him. David Liska, L-I-S-K-A, at the Cleveland Clinic. And he's going to talk to us about what is this month all about, colorectal cancer and its prevention. So, Dr. Liska, thanks very much for coming to the Cleveland Clinic in 2013 and making us all better, as well as coming on the show. You came a long distance to get to the Cleveland Clinic. Where'd you start?
Well, I'm originally from Vienna, Austria, and then I came initially, I was in Baltimore, followed by New Haven, Connecticut, then New York, and then finally to Cleveland.
And so we have another Vienna, Austria product in Cleveland who also is famous. Can you guess who I'm thinking about?
A conductor, Franz Welser Möst.
Yes, the conductor of the Cleveland Orchestra, which is rated one or two in the world. He was the conductor of the Vienna, Austria, and of the whatever that summer, the
Salzburger Festspiel.
Right, the summer festival. So, but as well as he is famous, we should talk about you and colorectal cancer. What drew you to colorectal cancer, especially colorectal cancer in young adults?
Right, so colorectal cancer is a cancer that can be prevented. And that's one of the things that drew me to colorectal cancer. It's also a cancer that, if caught early, can be cured, usually by surgery, and I'm a colorectal surgeon. So those are some of the things that drew me to colorectal cancer specifically. Now, talking about colorectal cancer in young adults, so like I said, colorectal cancer can be prevented, and we have seen that here in the United States happen over the last few decades, where the incidence or occurrence of colorectal cancer in the general population has steadily decreased. And that is because people are going for their screening examinations, including screening colonoscopies. And thanks to those screening tests, we have seen a steady decrease in colorectal cancer, and that's great news. However, unfortunately, what we've now been seeing more recently is that while colorectal cancer in people over the age of 50 and 60 is decreasing, colorectal cancer in young adults, meaning in people under the age of 50, has been rising. There's been about a 51% increase in the incidence since 1994. And unlike colorectal cancer in older people, where the incidence is decreasing by 1%, in young adults under the age of 50, it's going up by 1% each year, and almost 2% in rectal cancer over the last 5 years. And what's alarming is that if this trend...
And Dr. Liska, what accounts for the increase, do we think? Because I'm an internist, as you know, in executive health and wellness, and we never screened for colorectal cancer under the age of 50 in as far as doing colonoscopies or other types of screening. Why are we getting this in young adults, do you think?
And that's an excellent question, and it's a question that we don't really know the exact answer to. There are many different theories, some of them that make sense, some of them that have been proven, and others we're still looking into. One of the more common theory that people talk about is that we know that some of the risk factors for colorectal cancer, such as a diet that's high in fats, high in animal fats, low in fiber or whole grains, we know that these diets are risk factors for colorectal cancer. We know that obesity is a risk factor for colorectal cancer, and diabetes, for example, is another disease that is associated with colorectal cancer. And we also know that obesity especially is an epidemic in our country that's been steadily increasing at an alarming rate. So it makes sense to link these two diseases to say that the increase in colorectal cancer is probably at least partially related to the increase in obesity we're seeing in the United States as well. However, that's definitely not the entire story, because there are many patients, including my own patients, who are young, who are fit and healthy and eat a very healthy diet, who still get colorectal cancer. So it's probably not just obesity, and it's not just diet, and the other factors that we and other researchers are currently looking into.
Now, if this is caused by other factors than obesity, when should we start screening? And is screening based on only family history, or are there other things we should do? What's the current recommendation? I know that in certain ethnic populations or with certain preconditions, we've lowered the rate of screening age. When should we be doing that? When should we advise people to do it, and with what criteria?
Right, that's an excellent question too. So when we talk about screening, there's screening that's recommended for the average risk individual. So that's a person who doesn't have a family history, who doesn't have a hereditary colorectal cancer syndrome, who doesn't have inflammatory bowel disease, which we know predisposes to colorectal cancer. But if you're an average risk individual, up until recently, the recommendation was to start screening at the age of 50, except for African Americans, where the recommendation was to start at age 45. Now, more recently, and that's because of this alarming rise we have been seeing in young adults, the American Cancer Society has changed the recommendation to start screening an average risk individuals at age 45. And they came out with that recommendation in 2018. And now more recently, just a few months ago, the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force has actually made the same recommendation as a draft recommendation to also start screening at age 45 for average risk individuals. And they're in the process of finalizing this draft recommendation, which is really important because usually insurances will start covering screening examination based on the recommendation by the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force. So once this is finalized, everybody will be recommended to start having their screening colonoscopy, even when the average risk at age 45.
Does that mean we'll start screening African Americans or obese people or people with diabetes or with some of the other preconditions such as family history at 40? Or what's the proposal, and what's the role of what I see on TV, this Cologuard genetic test looking at your stool? Should that be the screen at age 40 for everybody or something like that?
Right. So in terms of when you should start screening if you have a family history, so usually if you have a first-degree relative with a history of colorectal cancer, or even with just an advanced polyp, the recommendation is to either start screening at age 40 or 10 years before your first-degree relative had what the diagnosis of colorectal cancer. In terms of what's going to be with people with diabetes or other obesity, at this point, I don't know of any plans to change the screening to even younger than 45. But that's definitely an area of very active research. If we could find exact risk factors for colorectal cancer to develop screening recommendations that are more personalized, where you can check somebody's diet, somebody's genetics, somebody's other risk factors, and then come up with an exact age when screening should start. Now, what you brought up in terms of Cologuard or other stool-based screening examination is another very important point. And we need to realize that colonoscopy is just one of the many different ways of how to screen for colorectal cancer. There are screening examinations that are based on visualization of the colon, and that includes colonoscopy, flexible sigmoidoscopy, or a virtual colonoscopy, which is done with a CT scan. There are also screening examinations that are done by stool test, and there are different ones. There's some exams that look for blood in your stool, and then the others, such as Cologuard, that look for DNA changes in the stool. And all these screening examinations are valid examinations. They just have to be done at different frequencies. One thing to keep in mind, though, is that if any of these stool-based examinations comes back positive, the next step then is to do a colonoscopy so that it can be confirmed and intervened upon.
Now, the other question that we get often is, although you're dealing with the young, how about the elderly? Should they stop at age 75 or keep going? And if someone is a, quote, young 85, meaning they're mentally intact and you think they're going to live at least another 10 years, would you advise continuing it at that age, or is there an upper limit?
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. And it's something that I don't think there's one blanket answer to. In general, the recommendation is to stop screening at age 75, like you said. However, I do believe that in somebody who is at a higher risk for developing colorectal cancer, and perhaps because they've had previous polyps found on colonoscopy, or maybe even they had a previous cancer. Or on the flip side, if they're a very healthy 75, because the recommendation to stop screening at age 75 is based on the assumption that a colon cancer takes a long time to develop. It can take from starting from, you know, just a few abnormal cells to a cancer can be up to 10 years. So the assumption is that somebody who's 75, it wouldn't make much sense to continue screening because of the long time it takes for a cancer to develop. However, if it's a person who's very healthy and has a life expectancy to live in the late 80s or 90s, I do think that it makes a lot of sense to continue screening, especially if there is a other risk factor that increases the risk for development of colorectal cancer. So I think it should be a discussion between a patient and their primary care physician who knows them best and knows what their overall health is, and then to decide when they should stop screening.
And what is the, you alluded to the fact that you're doing research to try and find some of the factors other than obesity and diabetes driving the early development of cancer. One of the things that I've always thought is we've decreased the use of aspirin in the population, and many people are not getting aspirin. They're getting other non-steroidals, which don't seem to have as much cancer protection. In other words, we used to all take, when in the 60s and 70s and 80s, aspirin used to be a common treatment for joint pain, and now we use drugs that don't do the same thing as far as decreasing colorectal cancer the way aspirin does. What are the other things that you're looking at, and is my thought on aspirin have any relationship to reality?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. We know that aspirin can prevent colorectal cancer, and even in very high-risk conditions, such as Lynch syndrome, which is hereditary colorectal cancer syndrome, it's been proven that aspirin can reduce the risk for cancer developing. We don't know the exact dose of aspirin that it takes to reduce that risk, and there are obviously some side effects to aspirin as well, which is why there isn't a blanket recommendation for everyone above a certain age or with certain risk factors to take aspirin. But I definitely think there's something to it, and there is research into figuring out exactly what that optimal dose of aspirin should be. In terms of other sort of risk factors or causes why colorectal cancer is increasing in the young, one of the very active areas of research is looking at the microbiome. And the microbiome is the collection of bacteria that live in our gastrointestinal tract. And there's 100 trillion of bacteria who live in the GI tract, and many of them, or most of them, in the colon or rectum. And it makes a lot of sense to think that the microbiome is somehow responsible for this rise we're seeing in colorectal cancer in the young. We know that in the young, the type of colorectal cancer that's increasing is especially in the rectum and the distal colon, meaning the colon that's near the end of the intestinal tract, where we know that there's a lot of stool that sits there, sometimes for longer periods of time. So there's a lot of exposure to the bacteria that are in our stool. So there's a lot of things that make sense why the microbiome might be responsible, especially because there have been studies now that have shown certain strains of bacteria to be associated with colorectal cancer. So this is an active area of research that we and others are looking into. And the other thing is, what about the immune system of each patient? And is there something about the immune system of young people that are getting colorectal cancer that reacts differently to this microbiome than other people who don't get it? So again, there's still a lot we don't know and that we need to learn more about.
I guess the obvious question after you talk about microbiome is, should we all be taking, if you will, fermented foods like sauerkraut and kimchi, or should we all be taking a probiotic? Or are we so early on in this process that we really don't know what we should be doing? And I guess that the question after that is, okay, so let's just say you had a 32-year-old daughter. When would you advise her to start getting screening if you had a grandparent who had a polyp at age 55?
Right. So I think it's still too early to make any recommendations regarding the microbiome, how to address it, how to change it, or even how to screen based on a person's particular microbiome. But that's really what we're looking for. Are there certain ways how we can influence the microbiome in a way to reduce the risk of colorectal cancer? Or even if we can't influence it, can we identify those people who are at higher risk and then start screening them earlier, because we know that screening prevents colorectal cancer? So that's some of the things that I'm hoping will come out over the next 5 to 10 years. In terms of a young person at the age of 35, you know, if it's just a grandparent with a polyp, usually that wouldn't change the recommendation as much as if it's a first-degree relative. You know, if it's at age 55 in a grandparent, you'd probably still continue screening it starting at age 45.
Now, I must admit, I didn't know, but the Cleveland Clinic has a podcast called Butts and Guts, which you've been on. So what have I missed in asking you questions about young people getting it? You've told us about the change in screening criteria, how important screening is. I assume people have been avoiding screening because of the COVID issue, and now they'll probably flock to try and catch up.
Right. So you're absolutely right. With COVID, we saw a dramatic decrease in the number of people coming for screening, especially early on in the pandemic. In some studies, there's been over 80% decrease in screening from years prior. And there's been some catching up that's been done already, but definitely not enough to account for all those people who missed their colonoscopies. The other issue to bring up with young people, especially who are not yet of the age of screening, is that one other way how to catch colorectal cancer early is by listening to your body in terms of the symptoms that you're experiencing. Meaning, if you're a young person and you start developing a new symptom, such as rectal bleeding or blood in your stool, or a change in your bowel habits where you usually go from one bowel movement a day, all of a sudden you have 10, or the opposite, where you usually have one and now you suddenly go for a week without having one, or a change in the caliber of your stool. Those are all symptoms that you should really bring up with your primary care provider and discuss if you should undergo a colonoscopy to determine if there's anything in your colon that might be causing it. Again, the important thing about colorectal cancer, besides it being prevented, is that as long as it's caught early enough, it can be cured in most cases. And that's another important thing I want to bring up for colorectal cancer in the young adults is the treatment in young people can be somewhat specialized compared to older people. And that's why we recently founded a center here at the Cleveland Clinic, a center for young onset colorectal cancer, to specifically address the special needs of this patient population.
Fantastic on the special area. We would give out its website, but someone at the Cleveland Clinic made its website so long as I can't do that. So the easy way is to go to Cleveland Clinic, look for the Digestive Disease Institute, and then find Dr. David Liska, L-I-S-K-A. That's who we've been talking to, who's so knowledgeable about the subject and has been so helpful. David Liska, L-I-S-K-A. And as usual, this podcast on You, the Owner's Manual, it's 1035B. This is, we're 15 episodes into our 21st year. That's because we always do one repeat a year between Christmas and New Year's. So 1020 was our anniversary on our 20th year. We did a special on longevity as well. This has been exceptional, Dr. Liska. Thank you very much. And I should say to everyone, we are brought to you by Persona Nutrition. They're the one that allow us to do these. Persona Nutrition, you can find out what personalized vitamins. Can you imagine that? Personalized vitamins and supplements just for you based on your diet and your other habits. Maybe you don't need anything, but it would be fun to take the test. It's a free online assessment. Takes about 5 minutes at mypersona.com. That's mypersona.com. And you get to talk to a nutritionist for free if you want to. Find out what you can do to improve your diet, or what you can do if you're not going to change your diet to make at least your nutrition better. Thanks very much to Dr. David Liska for appearing here. David, thank you. And Caitlin, privilege. And Caitlin, who is our engineer, believe it or not, I'm taping this out in La Quinta, California. Dr. Liska is at Cleveland's main home of the Cleveland Clinic in Cleveland, Ohio. Caitlin is in Buffalo, New York, and the studio Umplink is in Chicago. So the fact that this works is always an amazing thing to me. But thank you, Caitlin, for engineering. But especially thank you all for wherever you are and listening to this podcast. 50,000 of you download us a week, so I really appreciate that. That's what motivates us. Thanks very much. We'll be back next week. And we have a great guest lined up for you next week as well.